Having just played the title role in Marina Carr's play Portia Coughlin at the Abbey Theatre, Denise Gough returns to the main stage this Sunday evening with a host of other actors, writers and musicians for a special event. Solidarity is the name of this gathering and its aim is to raise awareness and funds in aid of those affected by the war in Ukraine. Panty Bliss is on hosting duties and the lineup includes music from Keela, Loa, Sharon Ward and Paul Noonan, as well as readings from Stephen Ray, Sinead Gleeson and Mark O'Hallan, and many others as well, I'm sure. All ticket sales will be donated to the Irish Refugee Council, Durris and Irish Emergency Alliance. I'm delighted to be joined on the programme this evening by Denise Gough. You finished that run of Portia Coughlin on the 16th of March, in fact, Denise. I guess you weren't expecting to be back on the Abbey stage quite so quickly.
Well, yeah, I knew then that we were going to do this, but it hadn't been kind of put totally in the diary, but I knew that I was coming back.
Yeah,
for this event.
I suppose it's a nice feeling when you finish up on a run of a play. There is often that horrible emptiness. It's all over. You leave the theatre and the theatre moves on and you're out in the street going, all right, OK, where am I off to next? It's nice to know. It must have been nice to have known that you were coming back, albeit for something that perhaps you wouldn't like to be coming back for, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a performance for me this night. It's it's come about because the world is in total chaos as a result of what's happening in Ukraine, and we have these amazing people arriving in Ireland, and it's so important, especially as artists, that we provide some space to like raise awareness, create support systems, all of that for these people, and especially considering, you know, that the country itself, Zelensky is an artist, you know, and it feels like such a wonderful thing for us to be able to get together and put a night on that will directly help people coming to Ireland, looking for a soft landing.
Yeah, and I know that you have a particular a personal and family interest in this, in that your sister set up the charity Helping Irish Hosts, and this is one of several charities who will benefit, in fact, from the event on Sunday night. Tell me a little bit about Helping Irish Hosts and what's involved there, Denise.
Well, Helping Irish Hosts came about because it's actually two of my sisters, Angie and Aideen, who were doing airport runs and getting Ukrainians into homes just through people that they knew. And from my sister's kitchen, she's managed, like, with the support of an amazing community group, they've set up a charity to support hosts that can offer space in their homes, you know. And actually on Sunday night, the Refugee Council have really kindly ring-fenced some of their proceeds to be donated to Helping Irish Hosts so that we can kind of get a leg up into really helping people, because we're finding that a softer landing for people is if they can be in family homes or homes in Ireland, as opposed to straight into hotels. You know, it just provides, we have two families downstairs at the moment in Angie's house, and the neighbors are all opening their homes and seeing, you know, the kids go to school immediately. And it's pretty amazing watching, and the connection that you have as a human being to actually being so close to people who have gone through what they're going through. It's incredibly humbling and it's very healing for everybody, I think, you know. So we're trying to, with Helping Irish Hosts, we're trying to encourage those of us who can and have the space to open their homes up with the support of our charity so that we can support each other to take that kind of action, you know. And it's not easy, but it's worth it.
Yeah, and you on Sunday night, while you say, yeah, as you say, it's not a performance as far as you're concerned, but you are doing an introduction, and I love who and what you're introducing. Tell us what it is.
Oh, it's amazing. So there's a young girl, Taya, who is living downstairs, and she is a dancer. She's danced since she was 4 years old, and she wanted to dance for us. And so Michael Keegan Dolan for the last week has worked with her and guided her And on Sunday night, she's going to perform. I mean, I get overwhelmed and emotional even talking about it. The fact that she's able to do that, first of all. But what we're going to witness, and you're going to see the people that are coming in to make our society richer, you know, it's amazing. And so Matt Lunson and his daughter Maisie are going to sing. Matt wrote a beautiful song that he has gifted to the charity because he's also a host. So he and Maisie will sing the song that we're going to release, and all the proceeds from that we make from that will go directly to the charity. Like, there's just so many people helping, Sean. It's an amazing thing to witness. And today we were out getting her costume and just watching this young girl prepare for a performance. So it's her performance. I will introduce, and so introduce Taya to Dublin. But it's most certainly my job is to introduce these artists, you know.
And even as you describe it, I can feel and sense from you just how moving the whole experience so far has been for you.
Incredible.
Just the sheer humanity of the difficulties of humanity that one sees in front of oneself. That's the hard bit to deal
Sean,
with.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, they arrived with a bag between them. Like, two adults, two women, and their three children and their cat. They arrived with a bag, a small bag. They've lost everything, and yet they're here. The two women, Natalia and Sasha, are teaching English on Zoom to their students all over the world who have been scattered all over the world. Alexi is in UCD already, and the two girls are in school. And like, I can't say that that's what I would be able to do if my life had been hijacked by a war. You know, it's absolutely humbling to witness. And whatever we can do as human beings to be on the right side of history with this, like, whatever you can do, if you can't open your home, you know, put together a little basket of goodies so that they have something to, it's all about soft landings. I think that's our main aim, is to create, like today we decorated a flat that somebody has so kindly donated for 6 months. And we went around and we just made it soft, you know, nice. And because they deserve to have somewhere to come to after what they have been through, you know, and then they can set about putting their lives together, because at some point these people want to go back and rebuild their country. So we need to be giving them, like, galvanizing them for that. And I feel so privileged that I'm so close to it because my sisters have done this work. Like, I'm just sort of riding on the coattails of that and doing whatever I can do, using my position where I can. But the people that are really doing the work, you should see them. They're literally getting in cars and going and picking people up. It's really beautiful to witness what humans want to do for each other when this sort of thing happens.
Just to talk briefly about a little bit about what you are up to since the Portia Coughlin performance. I know you took a bit of time out, basically, because you have been very busy in recent times. But congratulations on the BAFTA nomination for Too Close. I think we spoke about that drama actually.
We did, I think so, a while ago. Yeah.
Connie Mortensen, the character that you play, it's difficult for you in some ways because you're up against. I don't even like that phrase, up against.
Oh, listen, but we all know what's going to happen. It's Kate's night and I'd be thrilled. I mean, Mayor of Easttown, to me, Sean, none of my career, my life, none of it is about awards. It's genuinely not. But if it means I get on shows like this and I can make it mean something, because they don't really, like, it's really lovely to get a little nod like that. And it gave me a lift, you know. Portia left my body and I was completely depleted and exhausted, and you get a little, you know, that was really nice. But you make it mean something by using the platform you're given to, like,
do something like you're doing on Sunday night. Yeah, it's yourself.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I've lost loads of awards, Sean. I'm grand.
Yeah, you win the nomination. Don't be losing awards. Let yourself win the nomination. it's yourself, Emily Watson, both from Too Close. Jodie Comer is in there for Help. Kate Winslet, the one that you reckon is the shoe-in, Mayor of Easttown. Lydia Westerbitzison.
All brilliant.
Yeah, and Niamh Algar from Deceit, who I spoke a couple of nights after I spoke to you about Too Close. I think I was speaking to Niamh.
Oh, it's great. I'm so proud. Like, I'm proud to be amongst any actresses that are up for awards. I just think it's, you know, they're all so brilliant. I don't believe in anyone being the best at anything. I always think it's a community effort in every area of life. And if you make it a community effort, then you get to really enjoy it. And I just really love doing what I do. I really do. Like, being Portia Coughlin at the Abbey I had the time of my life. So, yeah, if a BAFTA nomination means that I get to work a bit more, then bring them on.
Great, bring it on. Yeah, congratulations.
But I will be cheering for whoever.
Yeah, and congratulations on the Portia performance as well, which I saw at the Abbey recently, just before the end of the run, and it was a wonderful production.
No,
I have
but
to
you
say.
Were in the original. We should have been drinking tea together and discussing. You could have given me notes, everything.
I think you probably would manage without
was
my notes.
Was he as good as you? Was
Moving swiftly onwards, Marty Ray was equally as good, if not better than me. I learned lots of things about that character that I didn't know when I watched Marty Ray playing it. Yeah, he did a great job.
He's a very special man, Marty Ray.
And Dervla Crotty, of course, who was in the original production, who I played opposite, was there as well. So it was a lovely evening, I must say, when I saw it.
Aww.
Apart from Sunday night, obviously, is the next thing, and I will come back to give people the details about how they can go and all the rest of it. What else is on the way to us? Because, as I said, it has been a busy period for you, Denise.
Yeah. So I have a show called Under the Banner of Heaven, which comes out soon. I'm terrible because I don't know the dates for anything.
Don't worry about that.
I'm the worst at my own publicity. But Under the Banner of Heaven, that'll come out. And then...
Well, Under the Banner of Heaven, starring Andrew Garfield and Daisy Edgar-Jones alongside yourself, yeah?
Yeah, Daisy, lovely Daisy. Yeah, and Andrew and I had worked together before. So, so I have that. And then the Star Wars series will come out, but... I mean, who's going to tell me when? It's like Disney, just not, you don't get told anything, even when you're in the thing. So that'll come out at some point. And then we do a second series, I think, of Star Wars. But I don't know. But for now, my focus is
Sunday night.
Is Sunday night and then lying down for a while. I think I do actually have to lie down, Sean.
Parts
you just keep going otherwise.
Yeah, parts like Portia Coughlin, I would say, take their toll. They're not. It's not something that you can phone in and on a Saturday phone in twice. You have to be there.
And the thing is, I'm not able to phone in anyway. I once had a director say that to me. He was like, you can't mark it, can you? You can't just do it for the lines. I'm like, no, I really can't. I get very involved in my own performances, Sean. So, yeah, it took a lot out of me, but it gave me so much. You know, I'd been doing a lot of telly, and theatre is the only thing I ever really wanted to do. So I needed Portia as much as she seemed to need me. So it was a very good combination.
A nice match. And it will be nice to be back on the Abbey stage in a very different way on Sunday evening, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely, definitely. I mean, I'll probably cry, but not in the same way as Portia cried.
Fair enough. It might be the actual Denise Gough crying rather than via some other character.
And I won't swear as much either. And Marty Ray is safe. Like, he's not, nothing bad will happen to Marty Ray when I'm back on the Abbey stage.
Well, listen, lovely to have spoken with you again this evening, Denise. Look forward to our next encounter, hopefully around one of the upcoming projects. And let me give people the details. Talk to you soon, Denise, and take care.
Thanks.
Look after
so
yourself.
Much.
Not at all. That's Denise Gough speaking to us about Solidarity. It takes place at 7 p.m. this Sunday, 10th of April, at the Abbey Theatre. And as Denise told you there, all of the money going to very worthy causes. You can find out further details, how to book tickets, and I'm sure even if you can't go, there is a facility to donate to the various charities. You'll get all of the details on abbeytheatre.ie. Seven on Friday night's Arena. Now, I normally like to be the one who introduces the guests on the programme, but if you had Sigourney Weaver to hand, wouldn't you step to one side?
And tonight, especially, we want to celebrate that for the first time in the 92 history of the Academy Awards, a female conductor will be leading the orchestra for this performance.
Finally!
So... So here is Maestro Emir Noon to conduct this year's nominated Best Original Scores.
That's Maestro Emer Noon. Wouldn't be able to teach Sigourney Weaver much, but I can teach her that at least. But that was Emer conducting the Best Original Score nominees at the Academy Awards 2 years ago. Emer, actually, just before we get stuck into that, what was the piece? Was that, what was the music? Because I presume you had to play a whole bundle of these nominees, the bits from the score.
Yes. That was from Little Women. And by the way, I have since changed my name to Emer because I told my mother, if Sigourney wants to call me that, that's what we're calling me from now on.
Yeah, what is it with the Irish names and American pronunciations? At any rate, award-winning Irish composer, obviously you are, Emer. I'm going to stick with Emer for your mother. Composing extensively for film and video games, including the World of Warcraft, and that's reached over 100 million players worldwide. Well, what if the Irish state could cash in a little of that international streaming services that have showcased a lot of the work that Emer has composed? International streaming companies like Netflix, Amazon, Apple and Sky have attracted audiences all over this island with their films and TV series, but none of the money which we pay to access those services is getting into the government coffers. And as a result, none of that money is being invested in our own indigenous Irish film and TV industry. Delighted to be joined this evening by Emer Noon, who we were just speaking with there, and Sarah Glenan from Screen Composers Guild of Ireland, who are calling on the government to introduce a levy on all streaming services, including local-based ones like RTE, TG Cahir, Virgin Media, that everybody would put in to this or would pay into this particular levy. Explain what we mean by that levy, Sarah, and why now?
Yeah, hi, Sean. Delighted to have the opportunity to join you. So in 2018, there was a European directive put in place which was really aimed at supporting these platforms to invest in creative talent in local economies. There was a choice of an investment obligation or a levy, and it was rolled out via this directive which we're currently bringing into law here as the Online Safety and Media Regulation to encourage member states to act on that. So we're really asking on our government to take the opportunity to act on it as urgently as possible, to take a percentage of the turnover that is made from Irish audiences and to use it to create a fund which would stimulate Irish talent making high value content.
And given that the directive spoke about it a couple of years back, and that it has already been introduced, this levy, in countries including France and Germany, I think both have introduced it. France at 5%, Germany at 2.5%. What's the hold up in Ireland?
Well, I suppose COVID knocked everything sideways.
Well, the COVID was everywhere, after all.
So they've just introduced the legislation and it's now working its way through the Shannon and the Dáil. But we were kind of slightly disappointed to see in it that there is mention of the levy as a sort of a down-the-line thing that will be maybe started to be investigated in a year or two's time by the new Media Commission, which is also being set up. Currently the BAI. So, I mean, I don't really understand personally, and we're part of a coalition which is a first of its kind with the Screen Producers, Animation Ireland, Directors, Writers Guilds, and RTÉ and TG Cahir. Because it's a no-brainer, and you know, we're a member of a European group with other composer organisations, and we're seeing, like you say, France and Germany and other countries bring in the levy, and they're getting an opportunity to work from that funding.
Yeah. So talking about having to do things under EU law, that applies to all EU countries. So if they can do it somewhere else, they can do it here as well. But let me ask you, Emer, about what sort of things do you think a levy like this and a fund like this, how would it feed directly into what is happening here at home? How would it change things from the way they are now, do you think?
Well, Sean, I feel very passionately about this because, as Sarah said, this is not one of my favorite American phrases, but this is a no-brainer. Mm. Say if we came in somewhere between what France and Germany are doing and give it a round number of, say we got 30 million for our industry. Now, our industry is made up of two strains in Ireland. We have the services side and we have the creative IP, intellectual property side. So the difference between those two is one, services, we're polishing the golden eggs. The creative IP, we're raising the geese that lay the golden eggs. So for instance, 30 million for our industry is not 30 million. What it is each producer that gets that money will go out. The hardest money to raise is the first money in. Then you get your matching funds for whatever money you have. Then you get your private equity firms coming in for investment. And then you collaborate with other European nations, many of which will be already sourcing their funds from the levies that they're collecting. So you turn your 30 million into an excess of 100 million. And when that intellectual property resides in Ireland, what it does is, say you make a film with a character in it. That is made in Ireland. We don't need refrigeration trucks to transport it. We don't need massive resources. We don't need to be, you know, hurting our environment, anything like that. We need high-speed internet access. So we sell our IP to theatres all over the world. That generates one type of revenue. Then that changes format. So after being in the theatres, we sell it to TV stations, to broadcasters all over the world.
So what you're talking about is
of every country.
Yeah, you're talking about really growing a small initial investment into something really beneficial right across the sector. But the fear would be, I suppose, in many ways, Sarah, people would say, oh, well, if and I'm only saying Netflix or Amazon or Sky or whoever it is, have to take 2%, have to get 2% off their subscriptions. Who's going to pay for that? Eventually, it's going to be the subscriber. It's going to be me and you going, oh, my Netflix has gone up by €1 this month. Are they going to just pass it on? Are the providers going to just pass it on to the users?
I mean, that's not the experience so far in France and Germany and other countries that have introduced the levy. And it's a very competitive market. We're all aware as payers of these subscriptions how the prices can fluctuate. The deals that they offer, if you sign up for 12 months, it's a lot cheaper than a one-month deal. So I can't see how they're going to, you know, work against that competition. They are all really keen to get as much of the market share as they can. And their job essentially is to sell subscriptions. That's their business model. So there isn't any kind of a development arm in that business model. I don't know if they would necessarily be that upset at the opportunity of supporting investment in this area, which will return to them because then they can get access to that content. You know, what they need more than anything is new creative content. We're all seeing it. You know, one show's on HBO, the other show's on Amazon Prime, another one's on Netflix. So they're fighting for the best of the creative talent.
Finally, though, Sarah, you know, if we can get that money back in and you wanted to start right now, we're waiting for this new media commission. Who could administer the funds right now, today?
Well, right now, I mean, Screen Ireland obviously are very experienced in this area, but similarly, BAI have had the Sound and Vision Fund, and it could look like something, a kind of a different version of that. What it does need to be is it needs to be kind of standalone. It needs to have an eye on the high-value productions, so productions over a million, and also to put money into development. So I think there's enough energy, excitement, and ambition within the industry, both within our creative sectors, the producer sectors, and within the broadcasters and the development agencies to ensure that, you know, the administration of the fund is really, it should be easily done. You know?
Is it just a matter of working out the details?
It's really about getting that ball rolling so that, you know, that we can access this funding within the next year or two because the other countries have already gone ahead. Yeah.
And Eimear, in those terms, how important is it for you, or how much do you like to think that when you're making a piece of work, wherever it is around the world, because you're an international, you're composing on an international basis, that some of that money might get to make its way back home here to Ireland to fund the industry here? How important is that to you?
It's extremely important. I mean, you know, I'm always on my soapbox about this kind of thing. So I have to take care of my own corner and input where I can. For instance, we're bringing home four major recording projects in the next 6 months. I split my year between Los Angeles, which is where I'm calling you from, and Galway, purely so that I can source projects out here to bring home. Because, you know, family's really important to us socially and culturally. I want to spend half my year with my family, and I want to see young Irish creatives living a creative life as creative professionals, paying their dues as taxpayers, and perpetuating the industry in any way that I can. And I'm not alone. There's Ireland Week out here in Los Angeles. The creators of Ireland Week are doing everything they can to do the same on a much larger scale than me personally. Well, but it's incredibly important.
Well, listen, it's great to have a chance to hear both of you air that need and that desire with us this evening. Thanks very much to composer Eimear Noone there and Sarah Glenan from Screen Composers Guild talking about this potential levy that they would like to see being brought in as quickly as possible. And so to our album reviews on this Friday evening. Three up for review as usual. First of all, we'll have the self-titled album from indie rock duo Wet Leg. We'll be talking about the fourth album from spoken word performer and poet Kay Tempest. And Dublin band Pillow Queens released their second LP, Leave the Light On. But we're going to start with Wet Leg, hailing from the Isle of Wight. Founded in 2019 by Rhiann Teasdale and Esther Chambers, the band came to prominence in 2021 in particular when their debut single, Shays Long, became a viral hit. Why did it become a viral hit? Have a listen. Love to listen to it all night, but I cannot do that. That is Shays Long from Wet Leg and their self-titled debut album. And with me this evening to talk about our three albums, Eamon Sweeney and Nadine O'Regan. Nadine, tell me about this whip-smart duo, it has to be said. Full of irony, full of really clever lyrics.
Yeah, I could listen to that track all day. It's so strong. And when they emerge with that track, last year, they created such a buzz, these two women in their late 20s from the Isle of Wight, and creating like such an impression on Spotify with the streams, millions of streams. Dave Grohl of Foo Fighters was absolutely enraptured by the sound. He said, actually, to the press that Wet Leg are going to take over America. And he was pointing out that himself and his friends would stay up till 4 a.m. listening to the song over and over and over again. Rolling Stone were mad about them. The New York Times were saying they've ascended more quickly than any band in recent pop history. And it's absolutely true. I mean, I started Googling them back when Shays Long came out, and there were only a few clips online, some YouTube footage, and essentially two girls just with this sardonic take on life, these really deadpan lyrics. And now they are so in demand. You cannot get an interview with them. They are just taking over the indie pop circuit.
Yeah, and hey, you over there on the Shays Long in your underwear must be one of the greatest lyrics of all time, I would suggest, Eamon Sweeney.
It's good. I prefer I Don't Know What I'm Doing Here. I was told there would be free beer.
But as you listen to that track, you do kind of get the impression they have to be really careful, and they had to be really careful on this album, not to just be too smart and be too flippant and then kind of become some kind of gimmicky novelty act.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Like if they did another album like this, then it would kind of be veering into kind of a novelty act. They get away with it just because it's so bloody good. Because it is
musically
so
and
catchy.
Lyrically?
Musically and musically... It is derivative in a good way.
It's derivative kind of,
like of it just indie pop we've been listening to for the last 30 years. It is still very, very good. They're witty. There's a warmth to it. there's something kind of breezy, spring-like in summer. It's perfectly perfect timing kind of for it. Probably the most famous musical act to come from the Isle of Wight since Level 42.
No, there you go. Nadine, do they need to be careful moving into album two to avoid that kind of gimmick idea that we were talking about?
Yeah, I think the singles are phenomenal. Not just Chaise Long, but also Wet Dream is such a great track. I just wish more radio shows could play it because the lyrics are a little bit raunchy for daytime radio play. But the singles are phenomenal. The album as a whole, as Eamon was saying, when you are sort of deadpan, sardonic, it can be tricky over the course of a record, because at some level when you're listening to a long player, you want to get the emotion, the sincerity of the group. You want to feel like you're leaving, understanding who they are. And I think towards the end of the record they do tease out some of their own doubts and insecurities, but it's always a little bit undercut. Goes back to the barbs, goes back to the to the kind of feeling of surface sheen. And I think on album one, yes, they can get away with it, absolutely.
Not on album two. Stars, I'll ask you for, Nadine.
For the amazing singles, 4 stars.
4 stars. And what are you saying, Eamon?
I would echo that 4 stars. It put me in a good mood.
So, two sets of 4 to start us out this evening. Let's move on then to The Line is a Curve from Kate Tempest. Mercury nominated Kate Tempest on 2 previous occasions for her albums Everybody Down and Let Them Eat Chaos. Here she is. Let's have a listen to a track called More Pressure, which features Kevin Abstract.
More existence, less improvement, more decisions, less solutions, less inhibition.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to fade Kay down before we get to Kevin Abstract. I should explain the reason that I'm rifling through the albums on this particular Friday evening is that we are going to the rugby match, Connacht versus Leinster, a little bit earlier than usual, as in we're finishing up at 10 to 8 this evening. So I'm moving quickly through the 3 albums. Kay Tempest, who are they? They go by the pronoun they.
Yeah, in 2020, the artist formerly known as Kate Tempest said that would prefer to be known as Kay Tempest. And the word Kay is actually very, very interesting, that it is associated with those colourful crows, jays. Oh. It's known as a Kay. It's an old English word for it. And they have said that being associated with birds known for their communication, curiosity, adaptation to new situations, and most of all, courage, which they think is the name of the game.
And courage is what is all over this album, I think it's safe to say, Nadine, certainly lyrically.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful record. The production is particularly strong. I think that electronica bed that sort of burrows in under the consciousness, and then these lyrics where Kay is sometimes oblique and sometimes quite straightforward about the changes that have happened. At one point they say, dead set on a wish that can never exist, a transition I want to be is, but I'm isn't. And this, I think, refers back to the long period that they had where they felt trapped in the wrong form and in the wrong format, and their brain wasn't connecting with their body. So I think it's an album that is a very important album for them personally, and a record that is really, really striking. It does so many things. There's a duet actually with Grian Chatton of Fontaines DC.
Yeah, we played it last night on the programme. Yeah, it's great.
And it's very interesting because his vocal is actually a little bit flat-footed against their vocal, and yet the marriage of it works very, very beautifully. It's quite unexpected. And there are an awful lot of collaborators here that are equally strong. There's the track More Pressure, as we know, that featured Kevin Abstract. And there are so many strong rappers, collaborators. Leanne LaHavis is in there as well. It's a really worthwhile record.
Yeah, it's a really super record, I have to say. I felt myself as well. Stars from you, Nadine.
4.
And what are you saying, Eamon?
I'll go 4.5. Love the sound of it. That's incidentally produced by Dan Carey, who also produced Wet Leg record as well, and the Fontaines DC record that's coming out in
Tempest and The Line is a Curve. Let's move on then to our final album for this evening, Leave the Light On. Growing global profile after last year's appearance on James Corden's late night talk show in the US, 2002 is shaping up to be quite a year for Pillow Queens. Let's listen to a track called House That Sailed Away. That's House That Sailed Away from Pillow Queens and the new album, which is called Leave the Light On. Eamon, difficult second album is one of the oldest cliches in the book, of course, but they had such success with In Waiting, their debut album in 2020, in pandemic times. What kind of pressure did that put on album number two, do you think?
Certainly pressure. Like, listening to album number two, you kind of go, Why were they such a big band? Which is kind of a good thing. In some ways, I've been pleasantly surprised. But the problem I just find with album number two, it's a little bit amorphous, a bit nebulous. It's hard kind of to get to grips with. There's not really hooks. There's not really choruses. There's lots of repetition, as we heard there. And often that's done in a very soulful way, I must say. And there's a kind of a loose theme of Ugnis and Chaldi, which kind of would be the loneliness on the shore, roughly translates as. And in exploring kind of liminal spaces and dualities, it almost blurs into the music so much that I just can't really get to grips with it.
And that song that we just listened to, Nandine, that we heard the opening section of House That Sailed Away, it has a lovely clarity in the vocal, and you hear some of the lovely harmonies there as well. But a lot of the album is in fact quite grungy guitar, that sometimes for me it got in the way of the vocals. Was that the way it was for you?
Yeah, vocally, they have such great strength with their co-vocals and really, really remarkable sound. There is an amorphous quality to this album, and I don't think it's trying to deliver or is delivering anything earth-shattering. I think it's a consolidation of their position. And what I love about Pillow Queens is that it is a little bit like Church of Pillow Queens. You know, they have that same cultish vibe that the Frames had in the 1990s. There's a sense of them as a group of people who are friends first and foremost, and then these amazing musicians as well. And to be honest, while I can absolutely hear where Eamon is coming from, they're a band that I can't help but root for, because they themselves seem to have so much going for them and so much ambition and so much musicianship, that even if this is more of a consolidation of position than a striking out for new territory, it's still a satisfying record.
Yeah, so a bit of amorphousness isn't necessarily a bad thing on your way to album number three from number one. Stars from you, first of all, here in studio, Eamon?
I would go a solid 3 stars.
A solid 3 from Eamon. I think you're probably a little bit higher than that. Am I right, Nadine?
Yeah, I mean, I've been teetering between 3.5 and 4, and I think probably 3.5 is fair.
All right, 3.5 from Nadine. That's Nadine O'Regan and Eamon Sweeney on our albums this evening. Those albums being Leave the Light On from Pillow Queens, The Line is a Curve from Kate Tempest, and Wet Leg, debut solo album from the group Wet Leg.